touch. See, I believe that the reason that these mountain yards seemed to be whole was because they carried their children around skin to skin until they were 4 or 5 years old. When mother got another child, a sibling or a dad would carry them around. And I was rather surprised at first when I looked in the scriptures about Jesus and touch. I didn't seem to get, I'd lost, even though I took Greek and Hebrew in seminary, I never really followed it up, so I pretty much lost the ability to do that. But I did notice that in Matthew and a number of other places in the scripture, you read things like this. When Jesus came down from the mountain, great crowds followed him. And behold, a leper came to him and knelt before him, saying, "Lord, if you will, you can make me clean." And Jesus stretched out his hands and touched him, saying, "I will, be clean." And immediately his leprosy was clean. And at some point in my journey in the scriptures, I run across to something that Clarence Jordan had translated in the Cotton Patch Version. How many of you have ever read any of this? Clarence Jordan. Okay. How many of you have ever heard of Habitat for Humanity? Okay. Habitat for Humanity grew out of Koinonia Farms in Georgia, which was an interracial community clear back when, long before the Civil Rights Movement. And they, a number of times they almost didn't have the ability to continue because of firebombing and because of the burning of crosses and so forth, because there were whites and blacks living together in this Koinonia community. And Clarence Jordan was a professor at, I don't remember whether it was a seminary or a Christian college in Atlanta. And he was a Greek scholar. And when he preached on Sunday, he became aware that most of the people in the congregation, being quite uneducated and so forth, that the scriptures didn't really mean that much to them. So each Sunday, he would translate the scriptures for the particular scripture lesson that he was using. And I'm going to take the opportunity, because you people, this isn't exactly what I came in here to do, but I think it would be useful for you to have some exposure to Clarence Jordan and his scripture. What he did was said that when it was a trade-off between being word accurate to the translation and getting the meaning, he would go for the meaning. In other words, an illustration would be you would understand if Pat, if you asked me to do something and said, "Oh, Pat, go jump in the lake." Okay. Translate that into another language, and what kind of meaning you would get. Well, one of the meanings you might get, well, it must be that it was written adjacent to a lake. And so what Clarence Jordan would do is, rather than being accurate to the words of "go jump in the lake," he would translate as near as he could the meaning of that. Say, for instance, in here, rather than talking about the cross, he talks about lynching. Although that isn't quite, you see, it doesn't quite extrapolate. In fact, I'm going to read just a little bit of what he says about that, if I can put my eyes on it in a hurry. Well, he says, "There just isn't any word in our vocabulary which adequately translates the Greek word for crucifixion. Our crosses are so shined, so polished, so respectable, that to be impaled on one of them would seem to be a blessed experience. We have thus emptied the term crucifixion of its original content of terrific emotion, of violence, of indignity and stigma, of defeat. I have translated it as lynching, well aware that this is not technically correct. Jesus was officially tried and legally condemned, elements generally lacking in a lynching. But having observed the operation of Southern justice, and at times having been its victim, I can testify that more people have been lynched by judicial action than by unofficial ropes. Pilate at least had the courage and the honesty publicly to wash his hands and disavow all legal responsibility. "See to it yourselves," he told the mob, and they did. They crucified him in Judea, and they strung him up in Georgia with a noose tied to a pine tree. Well, at any rate, in this translation, I looked at how he had translated the scripture that I just read, and this is how he translates it. "As he came down from the hill, crowds of people flocked around him. And then here comes this guy in bad shape, begging and pleading, 'Sir, if you really wanted to, you could heal me.' Jesus put out his hand, hugged him, and said, 'I do want to be healed.'" And the thing that jumped out on me when Clarence Jordan translated that as hugged, I thought, no wonder the people got upset with Jesus. I've heard some people make the extrapolation between AIDS and today and leprosy then, and Clarence Jordan has a international reputation, he's dead now, but an international reputation as an accurate Greek scholar, they were still a part of me that. So then through over a period of time and through pain and so forth, I followed my way through the Greek lexicons that I was able to get a hold of, and was amazed that this wasn't, are you familiar what an A-frame hug is? Where you're like this. This wasn't an A-frame hug. The same Greek word that is used there in Matthew, Paul uses, and I don't remember where it is now that he uses it, but he uses it of carnal intercourse. And I mean, this was an intimate contact. So that was part of my journey in terms of trying to make some sense out of what wholeness and fulfillment these mountain yards had in the midst of hell. And I never expected to do the kind of thing that I do now. I never expected to do that professionally. Now there's. What I will do is I was an associate pastor in a church of about 1,200. I'm a retired United Methodist pastor at this point, but I was an associate pastor and was interested in getting some training in a type of it isn't massage. It'd be I call it body work, but it would be closer to physical therapy. In a modality that is the official title is Traeger Psychophysical Integration and Mentastics. And you can understand why on the bulletin board why we put it down as a Traeger approach. And this was a system of working with people that began in the early 40s by a man who is now in his mid-80s and is a physician. And he did this beginning with working with children that had paralysis from polio. And what he discovered is that real light touch and movement can be registered by the nervous system much quicker than a heavier touch or with more vigorous movement. And also then, he didn't teach this for years. People would ask him, why this worked, asked him to teach it, and he said, I don't know. He says, my hands are dumb, they're like Fred Astaire's feet. Some of the older, my generation may have heard of Fred Astaire, but he was a famous dancer. And then in about the last 15, 17 years, he did begin to teach the process. But what was discovered is that people like those of us here, primarily, likely, most of us at least have, I don't know you well enough, and yet the fact that you walked in here on your own, you probably don't have any tremendous nerve damage from a stroke or something like that, where the nervous equipment is damaged. When it comes to trauma, whether it's accident or emotional trauma, or oftentimes just to deal with daily life, what we do, we don't, We shut off the nervous system. And what happens is what some of the medical people call sensory motor amnesia. And the sensory nerve is the nerve that is the feeling nerve. In other words, the motor nerve is the nerve that allows me to move the muscle. And it isn't that I have damage. It's just that I have survived by shutting off that awareness, and pretty soon it becomes an unconscious pattern. I don't know how many of you have ever had the experience of changing from driving a stick shift to an automatic. Okay, to start with, it's for a little bit, you got to go 1, 2, 3, 4 in terms of awareness. And then eventually that becomes unconscious, an unconscious pattern. And so the way that the system that I use, and I use more than the Traeger approach, but that was what I got started in. And what that does is consciously retrains the unconscious pattern. And one of the ways that the unconscious pattern will often show up, and this it'll show up in women more than men, because women more than men carry a purse on their shoulder. And Dorothy D used to teases me sometimes. There's a favorite coffee place in the mall in Vancouver, Washington, that we sometimes go to. And she was teasing me about how I have changed in the way that I look at women in public, and I'll look at them and I'll say, I bet that woman carries a purse on her shoulder, or some other thing. Whereas before that, I'll confess that I at times was guilty of being a chauvinist. Well, what happens, what I want to explain, is that if I carry a purse or a strap on my shoulder, it isn't the weight that is the problem. It's that if I were to drop my watch, and I'm going to pick that up, what do I do without even thinking? I raise the shoulder up. And eventually, my unconscious mind begins to believe that this is normal. And so the first step is to find out that this muscle is shortened, and then to go through a process of changing that. And so what I do is really more of a education in body awareness than it is a treatment. And I realize I'm trying to get into 1 hour, about 5 hours of. One of the things that I've been involved in the last couple of years is, although I don't do oil massage, there is a massage school in Vancouver that has me come for 8 hours talking to their students, not to teach them the method. For one thing, I'm not an instructor, and to learn this method takes a lot of time, because it's backwards of how we're conditioned. I'm going to take off on a tangent here about the school. Working on, say, like if I run into, will you stand up, Dorothy D? Suppose that Dorothy D was laying on her face, and I was moving a muscle here, and it was tight and resistant. Rather than pushing harder, I might stop, and doing that, I focus in on what I'm feeling in my fingers. And what that does is it softens my muscles, and then I'll come back and I'll get much lighter. And suppose that it's still tight here, and I find a piece of muscle here that's loose. I'll jiggle the loose muscle, and then jiggle the tight one, and jiggle the loose one. And inside my head, I'm often saying, "Well, okay, you know, notice this is the way it can be." And amazingly, many times less is more. And that's one of the buzzwords, I guess you would say, of the process, is that less is more. And yet in our culture, we're conditioned to work hard, that almost as though it's got to be painful if it's really going to be good. Well, anyway, in the school, what they want me to do is to teach them to be easier on their bodies, because most oil massage therapists if they work at that relatively full time, most of them will burn out in a few years because they work so hard. And okay, and so I need to be careful that I don't try to give you the whole ball of wax and then you end up not getting very much of anything. I did have some 11 copies of the Traeger approach that I hadn't emptied out of my briefcase. I've been at the school just recently, and I'm not going to say more about the Traeger approach, or at least not at a monologue. I may very well, as what I hope to do is to get to where you can ask questions and we can dialogue rather than me standing up talking about something that you may not want to hear. But anyway, there will be 12 copies available that describe briefly the Traeger approach.
David, there is a copy machine upstairs if you want to take another one up there. You have a request for more.
Okay, thanks. Thanks, Joe. And actually, I want to give Joanne credit. if it wasn't for Joanne, I wouldn't be here right now. She encouraged me to see about presenting here. And when I left Vancouver, I didn't have a finished idea that I'd be doing what I'm doing now.
Thank or blame me, one of the
two. No, I thank you, because I hope it's obvious. I enjoy this. I really do. I enjoy it. One of the things that Milton Traeger, that's where the name comes, the Traeger approach comes from, he for years had said he didn't know why this worked. And one time he was assisting at the operation of an elderly gentleman, and Milton's job was to administer the anesthetic. And so he called on the man the night before in the hospital, and the man was not in his room. And when the nurse called him, he was walking in the hall, and I can still see Milton demonstrating this. He said, when they called the man's name, he says, this is the way he turned around. And he said he just didn't have any flexibility at all. And when he was under the anesthetic, they was afraid he was going to dislocate because he was just a bag of bones. And Dr. Traeger said, I didn't think much about that. But because they're concerned for dislocation, normally they wouldn't have a physician go into the recovery room. But anyway, he went into the recovery room with the man, and he said, as I saw that man from his real flexible position on the table, began to go into that rigid position, I said, unless there's tissue damage in the muscle or bone fusion or something, the holding is not in the tissue or the bone, it's in the mind. And what I'd like to have you do right now is just do this. Okay. You called up a pat. I don't know. Sometimes I say when I do this, I'm going to go home and I'm going to figure out how many muscles we used to do that. But my guess is it was at least 30 or more. Well, wherever that pattern is that you called up, you didn't say, okay, I'm going to put this thumb over that. Wherever that pattern in your system is, that's what I mean, and that's what Dr. Traeger means by the mind. It's more than just the brain. It's a network. And as long as I've had you do this, there's another thing I'm going to have you do, and that is to clasp your hands in the opposite direction, or that is, in other words, if you got the right thumb over the left thumb like I do, change all of the fingers, and notice how strange that feels. And then, what I'd like to have you do is, in your own way, follow what I do. However, what we're doing here is we're staying in the unfamiliar pattern, and just unclasp your hands, and then clasp them again in the unfamiliar pattern, and continue doing that. And as you do that, inside your head say, what could be lighter? What could be easier? What could be freer? And if you get an answer to those kind of questions, the answer will come not in words, but in the movement and the feeling of the movement. And just keep on doing that for about another 5 or 10 times. And my guess is that for most of you, at least it's not as greatly strange as it was when you first did it. Now this is a rather simplified, and in some ways it limps, describing the pattern of reprogramming. But suppose that, see, it really doesn't make any difference functionally for us whether we clasp our hands one way or the other. But suppose that I've had damage to this finger, and it really did make a difference in the rest of my body how I did that, and that this was the normal way that I would clasp my hands. Well, what I probably would have done is I would have either figured out to clasp them like that so that my finger would be where it wouldn't touch the other one to give me the pain, or more likely I would change all of them. Well, that would be no problem. It might well be that if I had that problem for a significant length of time, say a 6 months, I might have the rest of my life clasped my hands that way. However, if that is a toe or something, and it would have felt, eventually, what I'm saying is eventually it would have felt normal to do that. If it's a change in the way I walk, because say I've broken my ankle and my muscles splint to protect the pain, which thank God we do have an unconscious reflex. However, what usually happens with that kind of pain is, or that kind of reflex, is that after the injury heals, our unconscious pattern has gotten to be such that we keep part of the protection there and no longer are aware of that. And sometimes then that will produce problems in another part of the body. A book that I would recommend that you check in the library for, this is Somatics by a man by the name of Thomas Hanna. And there's an interesting, to me, an interesting story behind the evolving of this process. There was a man by the name of Moshe Feldenkrais that was an Israeli physicist. Actually, he even received the Nobel Prize for physics, having to do with work with the atom. But as a young man, he had problems with one of his knees. And he became aware that he really wasn't getting much satisfaction or help from the medical profession. He wasn't putting it down, but he didn't feel bad about the medical profession. But what he started to do is watch how he moved. Well, how he moved. Eventually, he evolved a process of dealing with body problems that is very similar to the Traeger method. And these two men evolved these processes worlds apart, didn't read any of the same literature until they were in their 60s. And to me, the impressive part is the way they evolved that was watching, looking at the human body. And the Feldenkrais people have a lot more written about how things work. Now, one of the things, the reason I recommend this to you is that one of the things that he emphasizes is that many of the aches and pains that we attribute to old age are not because of chronological age. They're because of the number of years that we have went through misuse of our bodies. And what he means by misuse is things like, say, you realize I use all kinds of straw examples that limp a little bit. But you may or may not be aware if when I move the finger this way, that the muscle that moves it this way ideally completely relaxes. Okay, suppose that the muscle that moves it this way doesn't completely relax. It's got 10% shortening. Okay, when my muscle moves it this way, it's got to work that much harder. It's going to put more pressure on the joint. And these are the kinds of things that he's talking about. And he talks a great deal. Somatics is really being aware of my body from the inside out. And if my body is largely a self-correcting entity, and if I'm aware of where my body is at, My system, if there hasn't been, trauma like scar tissue or bone fusion, that kind of thing, that my body will correct itself. So this is just a plea for you to pay attention to your body. Well, you got any, I'm going to let you ask a few questions, and then I am going to show you a couple things on the table. Yes.
Is this called the trigger method?
This is what it generally goes by, as a trigger method.
Is it often used by chiropractors? Would they use a trigger method?
No, and it's often confused with trigger. See, yeah. there's a trigger point therapy. Now, I'm told that there are a number of chiropractors in Seattle that employ a trigger practitioner to relax the person before they do the adjustment, because then you don't have the potential of stretching the tendons and so forth.
This person would have come out of Wisconsin, for instance. I don't know where this trigger came from.
No, he come out of Hawaii, and actually he's in San Diego now. Anyone else questions? Well, I'm gonna use you to experiment. I've done this with clients a few times, but I really think only fools are positive. I'm positive there'll be a couple of you that will make this work for us. But I'd like to have you do well, so that you realize and can be comfortable that I'm not trying to make you do something that you would be embarrassed about. Is the Feldenkrais people talk about doing some of the movements, and the reason a person does a movement is primarily that if I'm moving a muscle, that I can be aware of that muscle when it's moving as compared to when it is moving. And it's very, very important with the table work or with the movements that there be no discomfort or threat of discomfort. Because if there's discomfort, my reflex on my muscles is going to be to protect. And so then what we would be doing is we would be strengthening a pattern that we want to change. And another diversion here is in oil massage, I can make the muscles relax by pushing so hard that, in a sense, they say, I give up. And they will if you push hard enough. The muscles will relax. However, this doesn't influence at all the pattern that put that tension there. And the belief is with the Traeger method and Feldenkrais, and there's a couple others that are somewhat similar, is that in trying to reach the mind, a person is changing the pattern. And my goal as a Traeger practitioner with clients is to get clients to the point where they don't need to come to me because of what I teach them to do in awareness outside the body. But anyway, the Feldenkrais people talk about if a movement is uncomfortable, do it in your kinesthetic mind. And what they mean by that, doing it in a feeling imagination, not primarily in a visual. In other words, focus in on the feeling, however, do it in your imagination. You may or may not have heard of an experiment that I ran across that a coach had done, and I know that other people that I've talked to have heard about this, where he took part of his basketball team and had them practice, I don't remember what it was, do you remember, like 45 minutes a day at free throws. And then he had another group practice for either, it was less, about half the time, and I don't remember whether it was 20 or what, practicing free throws in their imagination. And the ones that practiced in their imagination improved a great deal more than the others, because you see, every time they did that, they made a basket. Now for me, if the coach had me practice, that wouldn't, in my imagination, that wouldn't help a bit, because I don't, my body doesn't know how it feels when the ball goes in the basket. So sometimes if people have pain in a movement, I will ask them between sessions to practice this in their imagination. So what I'm going to ask you to do now is something that I think that might be more helpful if you experience it than if I tell you. So I'm going to ask you to pair off. Ask her to imagine that she is going to turn her head, but she's going to do it in her imagination. And what I'm going to do is watch and see if I can see a very minute movement as she does that. And then after she's done that for a little bit, then we'll switch and I'll do it in my imagination. So what I'd like to have you do is to pair up with each other, and if we end up with a odd even number, why either I will pair up with the other person. Just, and actually stand up and face each other.
Okay. I'm going to look way up to you.
We're on even.
Okay, you're going to.
Yeah, I'll do it. No problem. And decide who's going to do the movement first. And then the other person watch them do it in their imagination.
Okay. Not your eye. They're not your head.
Fire alarm. And it may help you if the one that's doing it shuts their eye.
The
one that's doing it.
How long? Because see what he's doing it. Well, he's not moving his head, but his eyeballs are going back.
Okay. That's okay. Close your eyes.
Close your eyes this time.
Well, I've got to try.
And how long? Just a few minutes. Okay, ready, set, go.
If you see a movement, the other person, why, switch. Well, do it in your imagination. I'll tell you another one. Just illustrate. I think you'll stay with your mom.
Well, I don't see it. I don't see you moving anything. Okay,
And whenever you're comfortable, why you can come back to the larger group. And I'll tell you what it is that I was wanting to illustrate.
Okay. I think we did.
Actually, personally, when I first.
Yeah.
No problem. Well, they're talking to them.
That's one more. That's one more.
It's a meeting 3 to 4.
When I first read about, I haven't had formal training in Feldenkrais. I have done a lot of, had a friend that was a Traeger practitioner that had come to the Traeger approach through the Feldenkrais method because she had 5 vertebrae in her neck that were fused and had given up on her, and she wasn't willing to give up, but then was able to make contact with Feldenkrais when he was in New York, and he wasn't going to be available. So he suggested that she take the training as a practitioner if they would let her do that. And anyway, then I stayed there. That's where I got to know her, is that a lot of the trainings, why the local people will put up the out-of-town students free and so forth. And so I participated in some of the tapes that she used. And I was very skeptical of this moving in imagination. Well, I want to, before I get too far afield, what I was wanting to illustrate is that the belief is that when in our imagination we do a movement, we call up the pattern. And by seeing the minute movement, that is, we if you're familiar with computers, it would be like you call up the pattern, but you don't run the program. And we're wanting to influence the pattern that's in the nervous system, in the mind. And so if we're calling that up, we're influencing the body about the same way as if we were actually making the movement. Because one of the things, if you're doing it in your imagination, there's very little chance, unless you are in extreme trauma with a wry neck or something, that you will be uncomfortable, so that you won't have the potential of the protection by reflex. But anyway, getting back then to my own experience with Feldenkrais, I wasn't willing to suggest anything about imagination to clients until I was convinced myself that there was something to it. And so I went through one of the tapes that this friend Jane had given me. I did one of them in actuality, and part of the process would be to do movements on one side of the body while a person was lying on the floor, and then do them on the other. And what I would experience in actually doing them is that when I do it on one side for a little bit, I could feel that side being much more relaxed and lying closer to the floor. When I did them in my imagination, it was the same thing. And in other ways, it's kind of like I believe, Lord, help my unbelief. And the story that's often told in the Traeger community is about the woman that lived in the woods, and they asked her if they believed in elves. She didn't know, but they're there. And oftentimes, when with a client on the table, if I'm doing the movements, light gentle movements that I was demonstrating on Dorothy D, there's a part of me says, oh, this client says I'm paying David, and he's not doing anything. Mm-hmm. And yet, I'd say 70 or more percent of the time, it works. Now, I'm still skeptical enough, I guess, that I don't do it that way at the first. If it's some of the other things that I do don't work, why then I'll go to that. And the reminds me also of being told or reading that have you ever heard of a hypnotist by the name of Milton Erickson? He's dead now, but he was world famous. He was confined to a wheelchair, but when they did taping of some of his work, they had problems because the camera crew become hypnotized. And what they finally did is he hypnotized the camera crew not to be hypnotized. But anyway, he told Moshe Feldenkrais, he says, you do with your hands what I do with words. And for a long time, I didn't have any meaning to me. I didn't know anything about hypnotism. And yet mentioned that to somebody that does hypnotism, and they said, well, sure. He said, a large part of hypnotism, or one part of it, is suggestion. And this is what you're doing when you're changing. Well, what would you like me to do next? Is there anything that you would
demonstrate?
Okay.
I see the table. That's
yeah. Well, this is, and I was fortunate. Krista was the one that was responsible for locating it. Or Krista and what, a nephew?
Yeah.
And Christiane. They had asked me about doing a little bit with them, and I told them, well, if they could find a table, I would be glad to. And so that ended up finding a table for this. Interestingly enough, the Traeger method for many years never used a table. That he would do the light movements. I'm going to do one thing to show the Traeger method tends to say find the way that the muscles can move freely in terms of movements. Milton Traeger himself, even though he's an MD, he doesn't pay any attention to anatomy. Now, I'm convinced that his hands know the anatomy, but if you ask him what muscle that is as he's working on, he'll say, I don't know. And so his movements that he recommends to people to do off the table are not structured. And it's
look for the feeling in your hand, and that reminds me, do you think I should have him do the feeling of the movement?
We don't have much time.
Okay. Well, what I'm going to do is show a, what is a structure, one of the Feldenkrais things that is structured. And what this will illustrate is, I tell you, what I wanted to illustrate is that they, Feldenkrais people, talk about a conscious override of an unconscious pattern. In fact, the way they talk about it is a cortical override of a brainstem pattern. And one of the movements that they'll have a person do to relax muscles in the middle part of the body is this kind of thing. In other words, and if it's this muscle here that's really contracting, but what I, in order for it to be effective, I raise it up as far as I comfortably can, and then I slowly relax it. And it's that slowly, and focus in on the feel of that muscle. And it's the slow relaxation that is the important part of this movement. It really wouldn't matter if I went like that and then slowly come back down. But the reason they ask a person to do it slowly is that if I come up slowly, I'm more apt to come down slowly. And as I'm coming down, focusing in on that feeling of that muscle, what I am doing is I am consciously overriding an unconscious pattern.
So if you have a strained muscle because you've done something, you do that to help relieve the tension from it? Or would this not be a physical kind of thing? Would this be more of a tension kind of thing?
Well, if it's tension, why that... Now you see, if it's inflamed, then, well, if you can do it without discomfort, but if it's an injury that's inflamed, chances are it's not going to be comfortable to do it. I just wanted to illustrate this as a way. Joanne, were you asking?
Well, no, you. Yeah, of course, I got 1,000, but you do what you're going to say, and then I'll. Yeah.
No, well, I just another way of talking about that. That it's changing the pattern that's in our mind, again, thinking of the mind being more than just the brain.
Okay, then I will ask. I'm just going to take one of the situations. I need examples for, and one of my things is that I have a slip vertebrae in the lower L5, 4 and 5. Among other things, I had a hip replacement and a bunch of other stuff. Mm-hmm. And anyway, when I go in to get checked, my physicians say, "Why are you limping?" Or you know, going like this. And I said, "Gee, I wasn't where I was." And he says, "Well, can you walk without it?" And of course, I have the sciatica down here and stuff. And the orthopedic man can fix that, but of course, because I would like to try to do I have back exercises, and I know that if I don't, if my gait is not normal, then something else is going to hurt. And so the word I wanted to say earlier was compensate, how we compensate for whatever it is.
Yeah.
And I've had to do a lot of compensating, but then it causes other problems. So say what I'm trying to do is work through this sciatica pain so that every morning or around here I can walk without limping or without hanging on the railing or without pain.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's just simply going through that exercise period in the morning and that'll do it. And sometimes it's that and the jacuzzi, and I've tried yoga. But what I'm finding is I'm standing up in the morning and I'm going like this, and I'm going, and I'm in a very good medical team, but I know I have to do a lot myself. And by golly, I can do that, and I walk for a while. So is there a way Traeger could help all of that? Because I'm
potentially, of course, no guarantee, and yet one of the things, no matter what the presenting problem is in this process, there's movements on the complete body. because they sometimes, like much physical therapy will, although I've been told recently that there is a new modality that I've forgotten the name of in physical therapy, where if I came with a presenting problem in the shoulder, they would work on all my muscles. But that is unusual rather than one of the things that I might have you do, for lack of a step, I'm going to do this. This is providing, let's say that this is the side of the of your leg that is giving you problems with the sciatic nerve. If you can stand on a step where you're can let this leg hang down. See, you may or may not, it depends. Some people can do this with can stand on the leg that's not a problem for a while. Others, when they put all their weight on that other leg, may be a problem. But if you can stand on that, one of the things that I would have you do, and I can't lean out, well, okay, I can move this.
How did you break your neck, David?
Yeah, really.
Okay, no, this is fine. I got a perch. To start with, I'd probably just have you lean your leg there and see, with my arm, I'm making the movement. And my leg is just hanging there. And then to really focus in on how that feels. And then if that seemed to work for you, or I might even in the same time have you pick up your leg. And I would show you this after I have done work on your entire body on the table. So what you're looking forward here, and the work on the table, I realize I haven't explained that. There's a lot of things I haven't explained today. It's passive range of motion and gives a real relaxed feeling. So what I have a person do in between sessions is to keep that memory alive. Because if, and again, this is an illustration of less is more. This is not to put down stretches or exercises. Mm-hmm. This is a different process. Mm-hmm. Because what we're attempting to do here is to reach the mind. And so that's the kind of thing that I might have you do. There's a number of other things. If that doesn't work, then we'd go to someplace else.
And so what you're saying is what, when we try that, you're saying that when I get in that position, assuming the pain was there, that in that position it probably wouldn't be. So then I do that little tiny bit to train the mind that, okay, here's the way, Joanne, your body can be without the, you can, so the pain won't be there.
Now, if the Feldenkrais, see, now that was, there was really no structure to that.
Yeah, let me interrupt you.
Sure.
Because we have just...
Thank you, I appreciate
a few
that.
Minutes. I would think that if you had somebody on the table and just illustrated one of the movements, that
okay.
might...
Okay, and what do you think would be the best one to... Or why not? There's no best, well, one of them.
I don't know, although I'm a poor candidate, I could get on the table and you could do one of the... let me be on my belly on the table.
Well, let me do it on somebody else if they're at least given the chance.
Oh,
and
okay.
You're talking about the back rocking, or what are you talking about?
The back rocking, yeah.
Okay, anybody, and you just leave your clothes on with this.
There you go.
One minute, I'm going to trim our sore heel, will you?
Sore heel. Okay,
we got it. Move up just, that's fine. So what I want here, what would happen is that normally if, unless he came in with low back problems, I would have done movements on the entire front of his body before I got to this point.
Mm-hmm.
But if he'd come in saying that his lower back hurt, I'd start out this way and then have him turn over and, let's see, move your buttocks towards me just a little bit, will you? A little bit more. There we are, fine. And give me your name, will you?
Winston.
Winston. And I'd also have a towel for, well, here. This, if there's any way you can use this to make your head more comfortable, feel free to do it. And you put your hands wherever you choose to, and if I don't like where they're at, we'll negotiate.
Mm-hmm.
Dorothy Dee, will you monitor the time for me then, please?
Yeah. Actually, according to my watch, 4 minutes. Yeah, ma'am.
Can we come a little closer?
Sure, you can come, and you can talk to me. Normally, I wouldn't talk much during the... And notice that, my movement is coming from my legs. I have my arms out straight, and I'm not putting much pressure at all on him.
This doesn't cost much?
No, this is free.
You mentioned lower back now. That's what I'm involved in. Lower back is between my shoulder blades. Would you do the same thing with lower back then? Or?
Yeah, and the question in my voice is there's one part of me that really wouldn't know until I had you on the table. Now, what's the value of this is one of the reasons that I placed his feet where I did is you notice how his hips are rolling, the legs are rolling. And on the tops of our hips, we have six muscles that are called the rotator muscles. And, well, for instance, like, now you're talking about sciatic pain. There's one muscle that where the big sciatic nerve goes between two of those rotator muscles, and so any tension that's in those muscles will increase the possibility for discomfort.
When you work on somebody for a certain like lower back pain, how many sessions do you a person come?
Well, what I do is if you were asking me that or expecting to come, I would say after three sessions, I'm fairly confident that I can tell you where we're at. Mm-hmm. Now, what that's about, so one thing I didn't tell you is be sure and let me know if anything's uncomfortable or even if you think it's uncomfortable.
Okay. You look great.
Some of the variables are, I have no knowledge as to how much you're aware of your own body. Mm-hmm. And occasionally there'll be somebody who just simply cannot tell that the muscles are relaxing. Probably the most important variable is whether people will attempt to do the kinds of things that I ask them to do between sessions. Because in many cases people can do much more for themselves than I can do for them. You see, in this kind of thing, in a sense, I'm really giving the environment for this, but any relaxation that Winston's getting, he's causing that in his body, I'm not. I'm providing the environment. And if a person is comfortable with nudity, what I have them do is just leave on underpants or shorts. However, the bottom line, the most important thing is that the person's comfortable. Now, the value of not having the clothes on is like even here, although it doesn't make as much difference here, I don't have the friction. So I gotta grip harder. And so the muscles underneath that are going to be threatened quicker than if there wasn't that pressure.
Now, if he was having tightness in his shoulders, would you be feeling his muscles to see where that...
Well, if he had tightness in his shoulders, I'd do something like this. Again, tell me if you're comfortable. And again, you see, I'm by using his arm as a lever, I'm influencing muscles that I can't begin to get at with my fingers.
Mm-hmm. So in the session, do you work on the whole body?
Yes.
It's 20 out, David.
Okay.
I just have a quick question on that. What can you do on your own if you've got tension in your shoulders? Can you think that through, or can you...
No, not that I usually don't listen to her anyway, but I am going to quit with you, Winston. What I would start out doing is, after you got off the table, I would...
How much is that chart?
I'd say, okay, much as you can.
He almost
makes
a canvas,
though.
You really have to go
to
somebody.
Yeah,
thanks for both of you.
And see if you can get to where it's really similar.
It'd be kind of funny.
And you can see how open people are. So
one thing that's fun here, we could use a series of workshops using that somatic.
Well, it's not because could you are in other disciplines and to accept another.
And yet basically what I would be doing is preventing the buildup. If I become aware of discomfort, then I know that I'm not doing what I how far in your muscle
like
you
I was reaching for something.
The goal would be that
this
there
morning
would be a difference.
Realized that what I had done.
Get that. Go to some Feldenkrais.
Anyway, it is fascinating.
It is. Yeah. Now, is somatic something that you use in conjunction with
what Feldenkrais might do
so
is
the two go
because
say,
okay,
the Traeger.
I'm going to
put Milton.
I'm going to pull my shoulder up towards
first
my ear.
The body work.
Being really gentle, not trying to get it as far as Feldenkrais, I can, but just enough so that I can feel it move. And then I'll just relax it. Let it come back. I don't push it back.
But one of the challenges is we have tightened ourselves up so much
to
try and do it ourselves.
Put the two together 20-25 times.
Cannot.
And that's with the Feldenkrais, they're dealing with a specific way to move.
Are there any
similarities
between what you're doing
and
Hatha yoga?
Very simple. That phone number.
Well, I understand that yoga talks about believing that the whole body.
If you're interested in an address, I can write it.
So there's likely to be some. Foot about the way I think I would have it if I was gone. I don't have it pulled out as far as I can or completely relaxed. And I'm imagining that I got a ping pong ball that's statically clung to my heel, and I'm just going to move it along the floor about a half an inch. And then I'm going to relax my muscles and let my legs come back, and then push it away.
Vancouver, and then that's the same.
And then I'll pull it toward me.
One of the
things. And I'll the car. You see what I'm doing? Can you see what's happening in here? I'm really working on this part of my body. Now,
is that the affected side that you have up? Say you're right.
I started on the other side. You're comfortable way down alert. As I say, many people learn to take me in the back lot to use the drive, not down and deep down. Sometimes, too, then I'll have a person do this. Put those two together. And you see what that's doing to the little part of the body. And then
I'm really pleased because
try to do it in your imagination.
What is happening?
Interesting. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. By now, I think you've got a sense that I enjoy doing this.
I do. And that's wonderful. Thank you, Dave. Great, great.
Thank you. Well, that sciatic nerve is a big one.
When are you coming back to Holden?